Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joined by Wade Smith, 12-year NFL vet. Wade, Texans got what I like to call skull drug on Sunday, baby, in a bad, bad way, at a bad, bad time. In one particular man's career, tenure as a Houston Texan and as the Houston Texans head coach, it's Bill O'Brien, obviously. We've talked at length, man, about the fact that he's locked and loaded relative to having the roster, the culture, the coaching staff, all these things in place, his quarterback, and you take it one step further than you did last year. You get beyond the first round, the wild card round of the playoffs. You get to the division round. And the one thing happens that we said could not happen at this point in time, and that is a very, very convincing victory by the Kansas City Chiefs. Yeah. And when I say very convincing, all three phases of the game. And so it poses the question, man. Look, back in 1993 versus the Buffalo Bills, that comeback that the Buffalo Bills had late in that game, it's still talked about in emotional ways. Every time the Buffalo Bills logo shoots across the screen, I would imagine there's some Oiler fans that it pains them to see that logo. This is a game that is as difficult to stomach at this point in time, 2 or 3 days later, as I would imagine the Buffalo Bills game versus the Oilers in 1993 was, man. Is this a game that in any way, shape, or form, Bill O'Brien and this organization can get beyond?
I tell you what, man, just based off of conversations that I've had with a lot of people in person, social media, text line, listening to the radio, based off of the way that game went, being up 24-0, some of the decisions that were made by Bill O'Brien, I don't think fans of the Houston Texans are ever going to forgive Bill for what happened that day at Arrowhead Stadium. The KC collapse is something that I don't think fans are going to be able to forgive him for. I think they will forgive for sure the Houston Texans. They love the Texans. They love the players on the Houston Texans. But I don't see how Bill O'Brien comes back from that in the court of public opinion. Now, does he care about that? I don't think he does. I think he cares about what goes on in the locker room. But as far as the fans in this city, I don't think they'll ever forgive him.
Wade, it's hard for me to think that, one, he doesn't hear it and feel it. And he doesn't need to hear it from us. He doesn't need to hear it from the fans. I mean, he's no fool. He gets it. I mean, he knows. He's aware of the trials and tribulations that come with being a head coach. He's aware of the fact that they've had some success, but overall it's time to put up or shut up. I mean, it's we can't talk about the division titles any longer. With the Tennessee Titans getting to the AFC Championship this year, that means, since Bill O'Brien has been the head coach, correct me if I'm wrong on this, B-Mac, but since Bill O'Brien's been the head coach of the Houston Texans, every team in the division has been to an AFC Championship game, and he hasn't.
That's absolutely that is correct.
Right? So, I mean, yeah. when you look at that, you go, okay, now nobody cares about the division titles because you haven't done anything with them, right? I mean, at this point in time, you've won division titles. It's a great resume builder, but you haven't done anything with them. I just believe that, again, the way that this game unfolded with the Tennessee Titans beating the Baltimore Ravens, so it set up that AFC Championship right here in Houston versus the old Oilers. Add to that the fact that the Tennessee Titans getting to that AFC Championship meant that you're the only team in the division that hasn't been there yet. It made this game even that much bigger. Wade, I just – the way things unfolded – this week, I'm with you, man. I just don't see that there's any way that he can get beyond this. Look, man, I was part of a loss in college that people still, when you talk about a fan base, people still can't get beyond me fumbling.
Yeah.
The year I did. I mean, we were 8-0. Tennessee was 8-0. Arkansas had not won a national title since 1964. We had brought them back. I think my final 2 years there, 98 was the real come out year where we had brought the state back to life as relative to supporting a football team. And it's like game by game, it grew and it grew and it grew. And all of these other things, history had kind of had crept in because people said, started believing in the fact that we could win a national title.
Yeah.
And that we could win an SEC title. And then when I fumbled the football, essentially cost us that game, which eventually at the end, we didn't end up getting a chance to go to the conference championship game or the national championship game. That kind of thing sticks in people's memory. People don't forget, even the good fans, man. You got fans, I say good fans, even the casual fan remembers things like that. You're just your crazy fanatics that they're going to love you when it's great. They're going to hate you when it's bad. And damn it, that's what fans do. But even your casual fans, to your point, are going to have a hard time, one, not hearing about this debacle in detail, and two, not remembering it for a very, very long time.
Listen, Clint, belief is a beautiful and also a very dangerous thing. And the Texans fan base truly believed when it was up 24-0 against Kansas City.
No question.
Believed that was going to happen. And then when you saw some decisions that were made that were directly part of or the catalyst for that belief to go away and then go away in such an embarrassing manner, it's very, very, very difficult to come back from that. I could see the Texans going on a Super Bowl run in the next year or two, and all the way up until they got to the damn Super Bowl, people would still be saying negative things about Bill O'Brien because you can't replicate that feeling to go from such a high to such a low in such a short period of time. And it's going to be very difficult for him to come back from that. And also another thing that's going to hurt his case from people to having a favorable view of Bill O'Brien is the fact that he has Deshaun Watson. The same reason that's going to keep him in the ball game each and every game, and it's going to guarantee you 9, 10, 11 wins every season if he's healthy. That's the same reason where people are not going to give him any credit. And so, and they have reason to think that. It'll be very difficult to find a coach that could coach Deshaun Watson into having a 6-game, a 5-game, a 7-win season. He's just that good, and there's so many good pieces around him that it's like, you know what, hey, this team is 10-6, this team is 9-7, but that should be the minimum of what they should be able to achieve based off of the talent that Bill O'Brien himself helped collect.
Yeah.
It's frustrating to think about all the great moves that were made to get so many of these players here, but you still not advance and take that step going forward as far as what you do in the playoffs. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, you know, I think you make a good point, Wade, of I think a lot of the success, I don't think this, I know it, a lot of the success, probably more so than we give credit, the success that this football team has had is so so reliant on talent. You know, I mean, we talk about it with Deshaun Watson. A lot of times he got to put his cape on and go win a game. But it really is crazy to think that they've been able to win divisions and win 10 or 11 games in a season. And along the way, they did it despite some of the problems that we see schematically and some of the problems that we see in game time decisions and things of that nature. I mean, so it really is hard to wrap your head around those kind of victories. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's take some calls real quick. It's 713-572-4610. 713-572-4610. Will Bill O'Brien ever be able to get beyond what Wade has tabbed as the KC collapse? Well done, by the way. Well done,
that,
by the
man.
Way. You need to trademark that or something. So if somebody puts it on a shirt, you get a dime out of every shirt that's sold, bro. That would be absolutely beautiful. B-Mac, we got one in there?
Yes, we have Maria from Katy.
All right, let's take Maria from Katy. Maria from Katy, what's going on, girl?
Well, needless to say, I'm one of the many people upset, and I have a couple of points. My first one has to do with the arrogance of Bill O'Brien in that he is a former offensive coordinator. That's what got him to where he is, and yet he refuses to hire one because it seems to be that he thinks he is the only person in this world that seems to be able to call offensive plays. And I think if he truly wanted to be a great coach, he would admit his deficiencies and he would hire somebody that would make better decisions, do better clock management, things like that. You just cannot be a head coach. You cannot be a general manager. You cannot be whatever his third hat is and do any one of those things really well.
Look, I couldn't have said it any better, Maria. I mean, I think that's very – she makes a great point. And that's why when I'm laying out what I believe is truly possible with this team moving forward, I'm going to be blown away if Bill O'Brien's not the head coach of the Houston Texans next year. I do believe, however, that there is enough – there's enough substance. There's enough negative aspects of – the play caller, the game manager for this football team in the past to warrant
to warrant
that decision to be made. And quite frankly, I don't know that I would be pissed off about it. I don't know that I would be – I mean, to me, a play caller changes the entire game and the entire excitement level and everything around this program, this organization, if that were to happen.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, if you bring in somebody else – that is going to have a little bit more of a background or maybe a lot of bit more of a background that can focus to make Deshaun Watson the best quarterback he can be in and situate his strengths, that's going to translate to more wins and it's going to translate to longer playoff runs. And so if Bill O'Brien is the head coach at that time, fine. If he's not the head coach at that time, fine. But however you slice it, you got to get somebody in here that knows and knows how to accentuate what Deshaun Watson does best. That is the utmost of importance. He's about to get paid $150 million or whatever it is. You got to get somebody in here that can make him his best, because if he's at his best, everybody around them will be at their best, and it's going to translate to W's.
All right, here we go. Jim Crane, he wasted no time cleaning house after the penalties dropped. Did this put added pressure on Cal McNair to make moves sooner rather than later? We'll talk about that next right here on Sports Radio 610. What a day, Houston. What a day. I believe the flames are out, but there's still smoke in the air, and the dust has not settled, ladies and gentlemen. We're at a spot where it's a tough week, probably going to be a tough couple of weeks in the life of a Houston, at least professional sports fan. It's a tough day. And Jim Crane, the one thing I do, like I mentioned it, Wade, that Jim Crane I respect a guy that moves in adverse times with a sense of urgency. Man, I didn't even tell you this, and this is a great time to give you the story. But Jim Crane firing manager A.J. Hinch. How you like that?
There you go.
Manager A.J. Hinch and GM Jeff Luno.
Lunau.
It's Luno.
It's Lunau.
It's Lunau.
It's Lunau, yeah.
We've had two Major League Baseball experts come on and said both of them said Lunau.
Yeah. Okay. Tony Gwynn said Lunau, somebody else. So that makes me think that our Houston and Texas accents have taken over what this guy's real name
is. Definitely it's spelt now.
It's much easier to say Luno, but the text line's telling me it's Lunau. I heard Tony Gwynn say it. He's from Cali, man. And so Cali guys tend to be very articulate, and they're very good with their words. And so I'm going to trust that it's Lunau, and that's what Jim Crane said it as well. It says Lunau. So
I started out Lunau because that's the way it was presented. I mean, that's the way it's spelt, and then I was corrected. I was scolded because I was saying it wrong, and so now hell, I don't know. The Astros GM, you get the point. I mean, at the end of the day, he relieved both of those guys, the manager and the GM, of their duties. Wade, think about this. The Bobby Petrino's the head coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Right.
They go to the Sugar Bowl, which was back in the BCS days. Ryan Mallett, Jarius Wright, Joe Adams, all them cats. DJ Williams.
It's a throwback's names right there.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So you played against some of them cats in the league, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Through my travels, yep.
Yeah, so he's the head coach. He gets caught has the motorcycle accident, ends up being a girl that it was working for him, who he had rigged the hiring process to get her essentially to be his right hand man, woman,
I was wondering where you're going to go with that. Yeah. His right hand.
Right. And then he lied to the athletic director in the process, and it was all, boy, the power. It's undefeated, Bob. It's
undefeated.
Untied and undefeated.
$249 million.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So when it's all said and done, you know, he was relieved of his duties. He lied to the athletic director, essentially. And when it all came out in the wash after the investigation, he was fired. Well, this is coming on a backside of a season when the Razorbacks were as good as they'd ever been since the heydays of 1964. We took them to a top 10 when I was there, lasted for the majority of the season. The next year we were pretty good, but wasn't top 10. I think Darren McFadden took them to a top 10 at one point with a potential game that could have took them to the national championship. But number five in the country, BCS, I mean, you're balling. And you're damn sure balling if it's Arkansas. And they made the decision to hire from within. Mm-hmm. And they hired John L. Smith, who had been a head coach at Mississippi State. And they retained Bobby Petrino's brother, who was the OC, I believe, at the time. The point is that year of sitting with, quote-unquote, an interim coach before they – and trying to
figure things out.
Yeah, figure it out. But the reason the move was made, way was because they had built a lot of momentum and they thought, disrupt it as little as possible.
Yeah.
We can keep this thing rolling forward and maybe we can have another couple of good years. And when it was all said and done, Wade, after a year of this, they dropped from a preseason number five in the country to the laughing stock of college football. And the program has not recovered since. You think about what you miss out on. You miss out on 2 years of recruiting.
Yeah.
There was arguing and fighting from within. One, Bobby Petrino's brother thought he should have been named the interim head coach, and he wasn't. They were going to players and asking players to go to the athletic director and tell them that they wanted the other coach as the head coach. I mean, it was just an absolute nightmare. And so where I'm going with that is when you talk about Jim Crane acting hastily and making a decision – I think it's the only way to handle it, right? I mean, it's the only sitting idle for a year is dangerous, man. It's very, very dangerous. And I just I appreciate Jim Crane acting the way that so quickly as he did. And it makes me think about the Texans and what they're gonna do moving forward with this coaching staff.
Let me play devil's advocate to what Jim Crane did. Okay. The New Orleans Saints had the Bounty Gate situation. Yep. Sean Payton was banned from football for a year, suspended for a year. They held Pat. They stood Pat, played that season. He came back, and they just picked right off where they left up. They picked right up where they left off.
Yeah.
And so what is your thoughts on the way they did it as opposed to the way that, like you're talking about, that Jim Crane did it? You know, there is some precedent set of saying, you know what, hey, we got a guy that we really believe in and trust in, and we're going to – you know, let him be to the side and bring him back, and we're going to keep moving forward.
You know what you said is a much better example because they were only suspended for a year, and so they could have both returned and moved forward. You know, it's interesting that it could have went either way. I just think when you lie, I think when you lose the trust.
Yeah.
Of your boss.
Yeah.
I just think there's no coming back from that. It's like losing the trust of your wife, man. At some point, it's like, man, it's hard for a brother to come back from that, man.
Yeah, I tell you what, man. Anytime you cost somebody $5 million, the chances of you of them getting rid of you and not want to associate with you when it comes to business anymore goes up tremendously. And I know, you know, Jim Crane is a very, very wealthy man, and $5 million ain't it could be, you know,
couch change. Well, you didn't get there by giving away $5 million.
Exactly. You don't become that wealthy by just getting in the habit of giving up $5 million, especially when you told someone to make sure that you clear a situation up and make sure it doesn't happen here. So I get why he did it, but there's always more than one way to skin a cat.
Sure.
And so I've seen it done with the Saints, and it worked out pretty well, and I've seen it. We're going to see how it goes with the Astros. You just hope that it's not a scenario like you mentioned in Arkansas where – you're glad that Jim Crane did it that way so you don't run into the issues that you had while you were in Arkansas.
Well, you just letting a situation that should last a week, essentially, drag out for a year plus, because without having a true figurehead in place to drive the ship is a dangerous, dangerous thing. I mean, and we don't know. I mean, you know, with Sean Payton, you know, that deal, I don't recall who was the interim head coach, but that guy may have, the ownership may have felt pretty good about that guy being the head coach. That's a much better example than my college deal, because you're dealing with kids. You're dealing with a different situation in college. But I just know it's dangerous as hell to let something drag out and let that doubt drag out for a long period of time, because then it sets in, and the longer you wait, the harder it is it's going to be to come back from if you do indeed dig a hole. Wade, but the Jim Crane, you know, where we were going with that, the Jim Crane deal is he acted pretty hastily. And so it leads you automatically across town to think about what is Cal McNair going to do with the Houston Texans, because I don't think there's any argument. There's no debate right now that Bill O'Brien's seat is hot. When I started this job a year ago, Wade, there were people calling into about Bill O'Brien's seat is hot. I'm like, no, it ain't. They're the O-line. I mean, give him 6-2 sacks. He did injuries across the board. The stars aren't aligned. He can go sit down with an owner and go, yeah, here's why, here's why, here's why, here's why. You can't do that now.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, when the Jim Crane deal just came out, we were sitting here live on air listening to the press conference, and he said, I dismissed Luhnow and dismissed A.J. Hinch. I was like, wow. And then I thought to myself, does that put extra pressure on Kyle McNair, or does that take a ton of pressure off Cal McNair? Because this is a huge story. This is something that we've been talking about over the past couple of days, and you know we wouldn't have been talking about Astros baseball if this stuff wouldn't have came out, because the bullseye and the target was directly on Bill O'Brien.
No question.
This fan base wanted blood, and they still do. They still very, very interested in seeing a change made at the highest level over there at NRG. But it's an interesting thought, like, did this take pressure off Kyle McNair, or did it put extra pressure on him because Jim Crane decided to say, you know what, I'm going to cut this situation off. This is a bad deal that would happen here. Or, I mean, Kyle McNair could be looking at it and say, you know what, we've won, you know, 4 out of 5 division championships. Listening to John McClain talking earlier on In the Loop, he was saying that there's no way that Bill O'Brien is going to be leaving here anytime soon, like 2-3 years down the road before John McClain said it would take 2 losing seasons out of Bill O'Brien for that to even be considered of a move that's being made. But it'd be interesting to see, okay, if that's the thought process 24, 48 hours ago, does that process change because of what happened over there at Minute Maid?
That'd be a long 2 years for me and you sitting in these chairs talking about a losing team for 2 years. That'd suck.
But see, that's the thing. It won't happen.
Yeah, no.
Deshaun Watts, they got too many good people.
Good point. Yeah,
players win games more times than not, unless you get to, it comes when you get to those Kansas City Chiefs type of opponents, the premium opponents, that's when the coaching can help make the difference. And so, but they're not going to have losing seasons because they have too many good players. If they're healthy, they're going to be a team that's every year in contention for the division.
Yeah, your point was on display. Coaching makes a difference when you get into the Elite Eight and the Final Four and in the Super Bowl, and clearly there's a gap. There's a large gap between the Texans and the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's take a call real quick. Let's go to Kevin from Southwest. Kevin, what's going on, man?
Hey, how's it going, fellas? You hear me okay?
Yes, sir. We got you.
All right, but I want to make a couple points, man, if I'm allowed. First, I want to touch on the players, man. I'm a diehard Texans fan. I'll go all the way back to the Oilers, man, take pride in my team and the players. Man, my heart goes out to the players, man, like Andre Johnson, Aaron Foster, all the good players that we done had. And I feel they pretty much wasted their careers here. Andre Johnson might not even make the He might not even make the Hall of Fame. And I blame Kubiak for that. And I feel like the same thing is going on right now. I hate to see it happen with J.J. and Hopkins and everybody else. You know what I mean? Warren Daniels had to go to another team to get a ring. That's one thing, man. And another thing on the ownership, when you think about it, man, since we had this team, you got Kubiak. You went and got Kubiak, who'd never been a head coach before. Then you turn around and go get Bill O'Brien, who'd never been a head coach before. So what kind of team are you trying to win? That makes no sense to me. When you want to go try to get some coach that has some kind of record but having success. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Kevin, look, thanks for the call, brother. Look, I totally understand, man, is that it's if a hire needs to be made, there'll be a conversation around what that candidate needs to look like. And I agree that hiring a guy that doesn't have a ton of NFL experience as a head coach is a gamble. I mean, I think we throw that around like it's just like it's no big deal, and ultimately that's a big time gamble, man. And so we'll chop that up if and when that conversation needs to be had. But I can't knock your opinion of being disappointed in the fact that the two guys, that Bill O'Brien didn't have a ton of head coaching experience in the NFL when he got here. Had a brief little stint at Penn State, but definitely not in the league. So hard to argue that one, man. But so as we mentioned, Jim Crane, he fired manager A.J. Hinch and GM Jeff Luno. However you want to say it. He fired the GM.
B-Mac, is it Luno or Luno?
It's Luno.
There you go.
So you're saying Luno.
But yeah, everybody I'll stand says, by Luno.
Okay, I'm hearing Luno, I'm hearing Luno.
Look, I'm just going
to
say it.
You need to try to get him on the phone. That's what we need to try to do.
I'm
going to
say it however in the hell it comes out, and then y'all can tell me if I'm right or wrong. The GM of the Astros, Jim Crane had to fire those guys. The report obviously came out, and I had a chance to look over that thing last night, Wade. I want to run through three or four things that really stuck out and clear up some things, I think, for our listeners out there that are hearing about the firings and upset about it and maybe having a hard time forgiving these guys and understanding what exactly is going on. I'll clear some things up on Sports Radio 610 next. Is it hot in here to you?
It's a little warm in here. You brought your jacket in here. You thought you was going to be
yesterday
cold.
Yesterday I was cold. Yeah. I ain't going to lie to you, though, Wade. I'm liable to get a little funky in here today, Chief.
Dang, you ain't showered good? What's going on? You forgot to put on deodorant this morning?
Forgot to put on deodorant.
It happens every now and again.
I forgot to put on deodorant, and it's a little sticky right now. I ain't going to lie to you. It's a little sticky right now.
Fortunately, I'm far enough away I shouldn't have to deal with it too much, especially if you don't, as long as you don't start doing some calisthenics, jumping jacks, anything like that in here, ooh. I think we'll be good.
Hey, it happens to the best of us, H-Town. I've been around the city. I know there's a bunch of y'all running around out there with no deodorant on right now. It's hot out there, boy. Look, Billy O'Brien, he looks like old boy. If he don't put no deodorant on, he's funky as hell. I bet Bill O'Brien.
I think anybody that don't put deodorant on and start running around, you're going to be funky as hell. But it's 4:35 p.m. or 4:36 now. I haven't smelled you yet, man. You're hanging on good, man. Your natural aroma is not coming this way and affecting me in a negative way.
Wait. I can't smell nothing.
Well, that's good, man.
Arm in the armpit. I'm afraid it's sticky, though. It's tough. Anyway, look, so Jim Crane, Astros owner, he fired the head coach, the manager of the Astros. There it is. The manager of the Astros, A.J. Hinch, and the GM of the Astros, Jeff Luhnow. I'm sticking with Luhnow. And it was all based off of an investigation, and the report associated with that investigation has been released. Yesterday when the news popped, we were on air. I didn't have I have a hard time reading it on an off night, much less while we're on air. So I had a chance to go home and read it. And what I say earlier, Wade, I am so thankful that damn report was only 9 pages long.
Yeah, man. It's not like you're the most, I don't want to say you're not well read, but reading is not.
That's fair. You read my feelings.
Read is not one of your favorite things to do.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
You're not somebody that I use reading as a tool to go to sleep at night.
Yeah,
or, something
no.
to that effect. You know, mm-hmm. you know,
I watched Power until my face fell on my iPad last night.
Did you watch the last episode, man?
You ain't going to believe what I did last night. It's already back up. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but I'm saying the last episode wasn't last night. I think I might have watched it 2 nights ago, but it was an episode about.
Don't tell me because I didn't finish. I fell asleep.
It was an episode about Angela's sister, the whole episode.
Well, you know what they're doing.
Yeah, they're going
through
all the suspects.
All the suspects that so we know. Yeah, okay.
But her? I mean,
yeah, I'm glad you said that because about 25 minutes into it, I'm slobbering on my iPad.
Yeah, that's why you fell asleep. But see, I fell asleep too, but then woke back up and watched the last 10 minutes. So I was like, I ain't missed nothing.
Oh, damn. Yeah,
I didn't know her name was Paz, man. What kind of name is that?
Yeah,
Paz.
Yeah, I ain't making fun of nobody's name, man. Sterner gets butchered all the time. Look, hey, so I talking about me reading, bro. I'm sitting in the, I'm sitting across the table from my lady's dad, and we were eating a little, a lunch after church Sunday.
Yeah.
And he starts talking about this movie and this book. And it, in my head, I'm like, man, this is one of like four books that I've read in my life. And look, I hope everybody reads. I'm trying to learn from Wade and read more, and maybe one day get to read to the kids and read Smitty's his children's books. But I'm like, should I say something or should I not? Because he knows I'm not a reader. You know what I mean? He knows I'm not.
But one of these books that he mentioned, you've actually read that.
It's the only book. He's telling the story. It's the story of the MIT students that went to Vegas and ended up getting kicked out because they stacked the deck.
What was the name of that movie? 21 or Black? Wasn't it?
They were card counting.
I think the name of the movie was 21, though.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. But the book was something else. Nonetheless, I'm sitting over there going, man, should I like tell him that that's one of the very few books that I read and risk him thinking that I'm lying to him, or is it cool? I was like, hell with it. I got a good relationship. I was like, hell, you know, that's like one of the four books that I've read in my life. And it was just one of them deals where I don't read at all. What were the odds of him talking about a book that I had read? And so, it's okay. I'm not a very well read guy. I'm not a very well spoken guy. I'm okay with that. I've owned it, man. To hell with it. You know what I mean?
I tell you what, Clint, like I tell kids that I go to when I go to different elementary schools, reading will open your mind.
Yes,
so many different opportunities. So if you get an opportunity to pick up a good book, find something that you enjoy, whatever topic, hobby, whatever it is. Read books about sports, read books about things that you like.
Coffee Bean. I'm reading Deshaun the damn Watson. Coffee Bean because my boy Deshaun Watson said so.
Yeah.
And I'm going to read it. I can appreciate stuff like that. Once I get into it, it's hard to put it down. It's just a matter of, takes a little bit for me to get in on it. Want to get in there and pick that thing up. But nonetheless, I don't know how we got off on that tangent, but nonetheless, the Major League Baseball Commissioner's report, Rob Manfred's report, after the investigation into the Astros and the electronic sign stealing scandal with the Astros, that report came out, Wade, and I don't know how you process information, but I need some time for things to clarify. Like I need somebody to help me get through the situation. I need somebody to help me wade through the situation. No pun intended, brother. But so there's a couple of things that really, I think, were question marks when you hear Jim Crane talk, when you start hearing reports of this particular report that came out. You know, we mentioned yesterday, and we made somewhat kind of tongue-in-cheek, talked about the fact that you can't fire the owner. The owner's not going to fire himself. And the report alluded to, now I don't know if the report was kind of saving their own ass or if this is really how it works, but they made it clear in the report, for the record, they made it very clear that there's a separation in the Astros organization between business and baseball.
Yeah.
And Jim Crane handles all the business to the point of apparently he's not even aware of what's really going on the baseball field. And when he is made aware of a problem, he passes that on to the GM and says, hey, you handle that situation. I got the business side of this thing. And so if you're asking yourself why Crane didn't get in trouble, and the manager and the GM did, that's precisely why.
Well, I'll tell you what, when you look at the Astros organization and where it was set up this past year, the past few years, Reed Ryan was the business guy. Lunau was the sports and the baseball operational guy. And, of course, A.J. Hinch was the manager of the team. So anything that had to do with stuff on the field, things that were preparing guys to play, scouting, all that type of stuff, that was all Lunau and that was all A.J. Hinch. So Jim Crane didn't even – he's not a baseball guy. Certain owners, different organizations, they tried, and certain owners will involve themselves heavily in the sports side of the deal. You think about a guy like Mark Cuban or Jerry Jones.
Right.
Those guys are heavily involved in what's going on the actual basketball or football side of things. Jim Crane isn't one of those types of owners. So if he gives you all that power and that leeway to say, hey, you handle everything that has to do with the baseball team and our operations, if something comes up, it's going to be on you. You're going to be responsible for it, and I don't know anything about it. And so I think that's where the distinction was made there, that, hey, Jim Crane, he was the owner of the team, and he wasn't involved at all and not aware of what was going on with the cheating initiations or stealing signs thing. So he, of course, didn't get any direct sanctions besides losing draft picks and $5 million, which is it's a sick, significant right. amount of money for, right. for you and I.
Right.
And
no
most
doubt.
People that are listening right
no
now.
No doubt. Well, the second thing that stood out, Wade, to me was that Major League Baseball made it loud and clear. I think after the Red Sox got caught with the somehow involving an Apple Watch and information being passed to a coach on the bench or an employee on the bench via an Apple Watch, Major League Baseball made it loud and clear to everyone, not just the Red Sox, not just the Astros. They made it loud and clear that moving forward, if anybody were to be caught stealing signs electronically or using electronics to gain an advantage, that the GM and the manager would be held responsible for anything negatively moving forward. All I'm doing is running down my take of the report of what it said. I don't care what the opinion is. The way I read it is that Major League Baseball had warned coaches and managers and GMs that if anything else comes down, that it's going to be on you guys. And so, again, it just furthers the fact that why did the GM and the head and the manager get fired? Because they were already warned that if anything was going on, you guys are going to be the fall guys for this situation.
Hey, it reminds me of being a little kid and my mom telling, didn't I tell you not to do that? Didn't I tell you? What I tell you is going to happen? Yeah. What I tell you is going
to
happen?
I thought you were talking to me. Well, I was like,
that's what it reminded me. Like, listen, right. if the powers that be say, if you do A, then B is going to happen to you, and now you're going to see your way out of the organization or the league for a year, that's exactly what happened. It was A, B, C. I mean, A, do this. B is going to happen, and you're going to see your way out. And that's what happened with the Astros.
Yeah, no doubt. And here's the one way that I think that you and I can relate to, and it's why I asked Tony. I don't think I got what I was looking for out of Tony Gwynn. But nonetheless, the point that it was Luno's job to relay communications from the league pertaining to this issue or any issue for that matter, and neither him nor Hinch effectively relayed or enforced that info. I think it's – When information is passed on to the GM and the GM, his response after it all the fallout says he had no idea about it. That tells me he didn't translate or pass any information on to the football team and to the baseball team. And back to what we talked about a little bit with Tony Gwynn that you and I can relate to. I played for the most part of my career. I played for Jerry Jones, who was a very hands-on owner. So when there were issues of any magnitude, much less something like this, then Jerry was in the meeting, right? The GM was in the meeting. The head coach was in the meeting. There was usually a, for instance, there was a problem. There still is, obviously. There always has been, but it was being brought to light. The sexual harassment aspect of being in the workforce, because a lot of these players come out of a university, go into, now you're an employee, and now you got to, which you always got to abide by some rules, but now you're an employee, and you got to answer to HR if there's any kind of problems. Not to mention the off the field situations with significant others and with girlfriends and with people that you don't know. Sexual harassment was something that was on the radar of the organization to be highlighted. Well, Jerry would call a meeting, and all of the figureheads would be there. The entire team would be there, and he would hire a group of actors to come in and essentially had a stage set up where it was in a living room at a party, or it was in a mall, or it was in a classroom. And if you did certain things, they would act it out and ask, "Do you think that's sexual harassment?" Well, no, it's funny. It's real funny, but that's sexual harassment. That legally is, you can go to jail for what that guy just did. You can get, your reputation can be ruined for what that guy just did. That was a meeting, Wade. That was an hour and a half meeting. And when we left that meeting, there was no doubt that we got the message.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder, in this situation with Jeff Luna and A.J. Hinch, if they were told by the owner, Jim Crane, to address it with your team, and then for them to not address it with the team,
right?
Is like, what was the thought process behind that? Were they good with what was going on and they were trying to get away with it as well? Did they not want to confront the issue because they didn't want to step on any toes? The players have a lot of power in that clubhouse and in the union just all together. So was it one of those deals? I would be interested to see and hear from those guys, and that's a conversation I'm sure we would never be able to get out of them. But I would love to hear what their reasoning was if they were told directly, make sure that none of this happens, and then they not address it with the team. They not address it with the guys.
I just don't buy the well, A.J. Hinch, he destroyed a couple of TVs, and that was his deal. Like, this isn't a four-year-old that stole a piece of bubble gum from the 7-Eleven and you swatted on the hand so he knew that he couldn't do that as he growed up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is real deal. This is company-wide meeting types of stuff. And to think that the Astros just simply allowed players that knew, they're grown men, they knew it was wrong, but allowed players to continue to do these things without any kind of leadership stepping up and saying, guys, you're going to get busted. You're going to get popped. I mean, they're in the report, they allude to, like, when it stopped, like, guys were nervous about other players talking and things. This wasn't just going to be swept under the rug. You know what I mean? This was a big time deal. And for guys to think that guys sat around in the moment and didn't realize how big of a deal it was, I think is crazy. I think it's foolish.
But see, that's, to me, I think it goes into the culture of baseball in general. Yeah. And the idea that guys are always trying to figure out a way to get an edge. And so when somebody comes from on high and says, like, hey, you need to make sure you don't do X, Y, and Z. And you're like, hey, man, you don't understand ball, man. Like, this is what we do. Yeah. This is, like, part of it. And, like, to this extent is a completely different level. Hearing Tony Gwynn talk about it, he said, like, this is on a whole other level of stealing signs. But guys figuring out a ways to gain a slight edge here and there, that's just part of the deal. So, I think that has to be the reason why they kind of turned a deaf ear to – somebody that's not a baseball guy warning them about something that's going on the baseball side of things.
Yeah, look, it's just hard for me to wrap my head around, right? We can chop it up, and I think you and I are both pretty reasonable guys and can give a little bit of margin for error, so to speak. But to think that it just walked around as if it were a stroll in the park that went wrong is I think crazy. Wait, we got a caller. Wait, we got a caller. We got the author of The Coffee Bean, the book that Deshaun Watson spoke about in his press conference, and that I'm going to read here in the next year. I'm going to get to read. Damon.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Damon, sorry about that, man. I'm still new at reading this phone screen and all that kind of stuff, and it's lit up like the Christmas tree, so I wasn't real sure which one you were, man. Damon West, the author of The Coffee Bean. What's going on, man?
Man, not a whole lot. Yeah, John Gordon and I wrote that book together, and I was driving to Houston, and I had just parked. I've got a meeting tomorrow morning with Mike Barber, speaking to a group that he has, a prayer breakfast group. And so I was listening to the sports radio, and then, bam, you're talking about the Coffee Bean. You know, Deshaun talked about it last week in the press conference, and, I mean, the social media world lit up with the Coffee Bean. It was really neat.
The power of having one of the hottest quarterbacks in the NFL talk about a product, and we're talking about it on air. What small world, you happen to be in the area and listening to it, man. Tell us a little bit about the book. I don't know I understood and listened pretty closely on what Deshaun Watson had to say, but heck, man, we got you. Tell us a little bit about it.
Absolutely. So here's the deal, man. It's a story I tell people all the time. The only question you know the answer to is the one you don't ask. I had just gotten out of prison. It was November 16, 2015. I walked out of prison. About a year later, I'm trying to get into the college football world to share my story. I played quarterback at North Texas back in the 90s. And so I go to the Bear Bryant Coaching Awards. A buddy of mine got me a press pass to get in. He said, you're on your own. So I go there, and I'm trying to hit up all these coaches, man. Hey, coach, you know, USC, Penn State, all these big coaches are there. The door keeps getting slammed in my face. And I'm 7 of the 8 coaches down, and I got one coach left. And all I want to do is drive back. I live in Beaumont. I just want to drive back to Beaumont, go home, lick my wounds. But I'm like, no way, man. What kind of motivational speaker would just, you know, throw in the towel with one coach left? So – I ambushed Dabo Swinney coming out of the bathroom at the Bear Bryant Coaching Awards. And to this day, Dabo will tell you that I shoved about 10 minutes of conversation into 1 minute. And the moral of the story is that Dabo was the one yes and all those no's that night. And from that meeting, Dabo brought me in to speak to the Clemson football team in August of 2017. And then he put me onto the entire coaching world. I mean, Nick Saban, all these other coaches. Now I go to all these programs all over the country and share the story of the Coffee Bean. So the story of the Coffee Bean is this. I'm getting ready to, I'm in Dallas County Jail. I got sentenced to life in prison for organized crime back in 2009. It was a bunch of meth-related burglaries. I was a stockbroker in Dallas and got hooked on meth. And so this guy is telling me what prison is going to be like when I'm getting ready to go get shipped off to the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. And he said, I want you to imagine prison as a pot of boiling water. He said, I'm going to put three things in that pot of boiling water and watch how they change, a carrot, an egg, and a coffee bean. He says, he goes through the progression. He says, so what happens if a carrot goes in a pot of boiling water? And I told him, I said, it turns soft. He said, that's right. He said, the carrot gets soft. The carrot gets beat, gets robbed. You know, it gets weak. He said, the carrot gets softened. He said, what about the egg? And I said, well, the egg turns hard, like a hard-boiled egg. He said, that's right. He said, the egg, his soft liquid core, his heart becomes hardened. He said, if your heart becomes hardened, you're incapable of giving or receiving love. He said, if you're incapable of giving or receiving love, you would become institutionalized, and you will not come back as someone your family recognizes. He said, what about that coffee bean? And, man, I got caught flat-footed, guys. I didn't know what happened to a coffee bean. He said, if I put a coffee bean in that pot of warm water, he said, now you got to change the name of the water to coffee. He said, the coffee bean, the smallest of these three things, he said, small like you, West, had the power to change the entire atmosphere inside that pot. He said, everybody in life puts out energy, negative or positive. He said, whatever kind of energy you put out, you'll attract back. Explaining the law of attraction. He said, so if everywhere you go around that prison, you put a smile on your face and you let those guys know they're not getting you, he said, we'll change that prison from the inside out. And he said, the best part about it is the other coffee beans in prison, the other positive inmates, will find you because of your energy. And the last thing he told me before I got on that prison bus in 2009 was, go be a coffee bean. And guys, that's exactly what I did. My whole life, I've got another book called The Change Agent that came out last March. And it tells the entire story of what happened to me. My dad was a sports writer. Y'all might know who my father is, Bob West. He was a sports writer for 50 years down in Port Arthur. And he wrote, and he was in the Houston media. He covered Bum and the Oilers the whole time. But, yeah, so, I mean, it tells the story of my life, what went wrong, how I got back on track. So I got to tell this story around a bunch of college football programs. And in August of 2018, I get a phone call. And I work at a law firm in Beaumont. And the phone call is from a guy named John Gordon. And John Gordon is this huge motivational speaker and author. Man, guys, John has sold 4 million books in this time before he calls me. And he says, hey, Damon, it's John Gordon. And I'm new on the speaker circuit. I'm trying to get into the speaker circuit. So I know who John Gordon is, but I'm wondering, how does John know who I am? And so I asked him. I was like, John, how'd you get my phone number? And he said, Dabo Swinney. He said, Dabo Swinney can't quit talking about you and that coffee bean story. He said, Damon, let's get together. Let's write a book. He said, this message needs to be heard all over the world. He said, this message has power to transform people's lives and change the world for positive. He said, write this book with me. And so we did. We wrote the book. It became a bestseller. Guys, we get an email every month. The publisher will email us and say, hey, man, the rights to this book have been sold in China, in France, in Saudi Arabia. It's in Arabic. It's in French. It's in Chinese. It's in Vietnamese. It's in Korean. I mean, the book is being – the message of the coffee bean is getting all over the world right now, guys. It's still a bestseller. It's beyond me. It's one of those things that I call a God thing that's happened in my life. But
Damon, that's Damon. Look, that's big time, brother. I appreciate you. I appreciate you calling and letting us hear that story, man. I'm gonna read it. I was gonna read it before your call. I'm damn sure gonna read it now. We greatly appreciate you being a listener and supporting us and calling in, and we appreciate you helping mold our quarterback here, Deshaun Watson, with your book, man. That's Damon West, the author of the book Coffee Bean. Damon, thanks for giving us a shout, brother.
Guys, thanks a lot, man. Thanks for letting me call in.
You got it, man. Take care. 5 o'clock fire is up next. We've got a lot of fire in Houston, a lot of smoke in Houston, a lot of dust that ain't settled yet in Houston. 5 o'clock fire next right here on Sports Radio 610.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.